Hello, world. Welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 227. I'm creator and host, Don Hutchison. Every day, I interview someone from around the world who has discovered his talents to do work he loves to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. Today, I'm delighted to bring you our featured guest, Mr. Joseph J. Baliro. Welcome, Joseph.
Hi, Don. It's a pleasure to be here and an honor.
Thank you so much. Joe, are you using your talents doing work that you love?
Oh, I am, Don. Trust me. Every day I try and produce, I grab hold and I seize the day.
All right. We want to hear the whole story. Joseph J. Baliro, Jr. is a 61-year-old trial attorney who for the past 29 years has practiced criminal defense and civil law in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and nationwide. He's the son of the Dean of the Defense Bar, Joseph J. Baliro, Sr., who has practiced criminal defense for over 65 years. Killer Legal Reality Radio reveals the ideals and attitudes of people who have succeeded in their life or who have failed in an effort to inspire others to make the right choices and to grab hold and seize the day. That's a pithy summary of your career to date. Tell us what you are up to now that has you engaged and excited, if you will.
Well, setting aside my very active trial practice, I have created Joe Baliro Jr.'s Killer Legal Reality Radio, and I am so dedicated to that. I think I'm working more on the podcast show as a trial attorney. I've also started a project called the International Academy of Podcast Professionals. I'm in the process of populating the pages, a resource for podcasters and video producers, one location to find everything. So I am definitely trying to be and continuing to be productive.
Wow. It sounds like you're being highly productive. Take just a minute before we get into your backstory and tell us the genesis, the catalyst that caused you to, that motivated you to create Killer Legal Reality Radio.
I'm a criminal defense attorney, so I've been exposed over the last 29 years, not only to criminal defendants, but their families and their friends, and questions over and over again of how these things happened. Why is it that my son, my daughter, my husband, my father continually gets into trouble? And my answers to them usually are they make the choices in their lives that drive their conduct and activities. I said to myself some time ago, there ought to be some manner or means to send a message to people that there are ideals and attitudes that have been adopted by people that drive the successes in their lives. I wanted to present, not only by example, the ideals and attitudes adopted by successful people, but I also wanted to demonstrate by comparison and showing listeners what were the bad choices made by people who ultimately ended up either in jail or in just a peck of trouble. So Killer Legal was designed to present not only those success stories, such as F. Lee Bailey and Bill Baird, the father of abortion and trial attorneys, but also the stories of individuals who made the bad choices, who didn't have those ideals and attitudes, and ended up, as in the case of Derek Glacken, life in prison for first-degree murder. Showing by example, that's pretty much the mission. Try and get people to understand the ideals and attitudes that will help them grab hold and seize the day.
Yes, exactly. Do you have both the top attorneys as well as the people who have been perpetrators or accused of perpetrating crimes?
Absolutely, yes. I had a series on it with Derek Glacken, who's a convicted first-degree murderer. I've had a series with a young man who was convicted of pedophilia. I've had a series with heroin addicts. In fact, I just launched a two-part series this past week with Sonny Driscoll, who was a recovering heroin addict. I've had other heroin addicts. I've had people convicted of child pornography. And all those examples by comparison, this is what happened to them. This is why they are today. But today, they've adopted ideals and attitudes that make them contributing members of whatever subset they live in. And in the case of, obviously, Derek Glacken and others who are in jail, it's in jail. Remarkable stories of recovery and of adopting a lifestyle that is productive, even while incarcerated. Derek Glacken has adopted ideals and attitudes. And it's also a means of showing people who might say, yeah, that's great. Look at how successful these people are. But I've had a hard life. I've got difficulties. I can't overcome those difficulties. Well, here's a demonstration by comparison. Derek Glacken, his life has been pretty difficult.
Yes.
And he's caused a great, great deal of damage. But regardless of the hard, hard life that he has and continues to have. He's adopted ideals and attitudes, and he is contributing in that sub-society within jail to be a productive member.
Wow. And he's in for life?
Absolutely. And he regrets it every single day of his life. One of the most telling things he said is, that evening I had a choice. I could continue to go out and drink with my friend, or I could go home. I wanted to go home. I could have taken that left. I took the right. I went out again. And everything that flowed from that decision has landed me where I am today. I stabbed that man 30 times. I killed him. This man had no criminal record, Mr. Glacken. I killed him. I regret it. I destroyed lives. But I'm here today, and I am going to be productive. I am going to contribute for the rest of my life.
My word, that story gives me goosebumps up and down my spine. All of our lives are just those little turning points like that. I could have turned left and gone home, had a productive life, but I turned right and destroyed a life and destroyed my own life and my family's in the process.
That's it.
Staggering.
Choices you make.
Choices you make. Well, speaking of choices, as you know, as we've discussed, everyone's life is composed of turning points every 5 or 7 years, the experts tell us, and we're faced with those choices and chances and changes, and we make decisions that propel us onward, some good, some bad. So this show is about talking about an individual's turning points and what they learned and how they benefited or suffered from those choices to move forward in their careers. Take us back to the early days in the life of Joe Bolero and tell us what happened and what you did.
Kind of amusing, because I always feel like I'm two-sided. I'm hardwired for business, but I'm also hardwired for the law. I have no compunctions about standing up in public and speaking to people. I have no compunctions about being the sole source of attention in a room. But as a young child, I even tried my best at business. I can remember that the earliest memory I have is 6 or 7 years old, shaving popsicle sticks down on a sidewalk to a point and selling them to my neighbor as a letter opener and a dialer for a telephone. And it wasn't smartphones. It was a phone dialer. I was selling them for 5 cents. And of course, when my mother learned that, I had to return the funds. My next venture was, I had gotten a creepy crawler maker for Christmas, and I decided I would make these rubberized creepy crawler snakes and spiders and sell them to my fellow students in school. Of course, the school stopped that when my fellow students started putting them in the food of the girls so that they could hear them scream. But as far as influences, I think my father was the greatest influence. I grew up during the years when he was representing Bill Baird, the father of abortion, who ultimately went to the Supreme Court of the United States in 2 seminal cases regarding contraceptive and women's rights, Eisenstadt v. Baird and Blotty v. Baird, which are actually cited over 18 times in Roe v. Wade. And those were very, very troubling times, because this was back in the 1960s. And of course, there was a lot of extremism and activism against pro-choice back in those days. I can remember being escorted to school by car. I can remember on the days when I did not have an escort, routinely being beaten up by other children who had been influenced by the opinions of their parents. And I was just simply an easy target. So I got a sense of outrage very, very early in life at people who tried to impose or felt they had the right to impose their opinions on others, whether physically or verbally, I suppose. And I think that kind of got me excited at the idea that there's got to be somebody that stands up and becomes a stalwart against that type of extremism. For business, I was hardwired for the law very early. Of course, you know, I also went through the whole era of F. Lee Bailey, beginning his practice with Sam Shepard, the gentleman who was the fugitive movie, and of course, all the other high-profile cases that he had. He's a very dear friend of the family and of my father.
I didn't even know about that it was based on the real life of Sam Shepard. I didn't know that at all.
The series was actually on during the time that F. Lee Bailey took over his case and ultimately won his freedom. That series had already begun. It was running, and it was very, very popular. And, of course, he had the Plymouth mail robbery case, which was, at the time, greatest robbery in the history of the United States. That was very active. Rape docs. There were a number of high-profile cases in this area where he worked very closely with my father. Obviously, I was getting access to those materials. The files would come home. I'd see the pictures. I'd read the police reports. See what I wasn't supposed to be. But had a great deal of influence on me. And I went and watched my father argue cases in front of juries and the like. And I found it to be a comfortable and an attractive avocation. So I've tried businesses, and I've had quite a number of businesses over the years. I've been a sausage maker. I've been a jewelry person. I ran my own web development company. I've done a number of things. I've made some money. But this podcasting, this Killer Legal program, excites me to no end because it gives me the opportunity to send out a message. It has a mission. It's not just about making a dollar. It's about hopefully improving people's lives. And I hope it gets broad enough. I hope it expands to the point where that I feel comfortable that I'm reaching a significant enough number of people that it's going to have an impact on their lives.
Yes, exactly. Well, I don't see why it won't, because podcasting has come into its own the last 3 or 4 years, and I don't think it's going to diminish in interest or growth. I think it's just really getting started in a profound way. So let me ask your opinion. The statistics on people doing leading careers that use their talents and skills and values and interest and so forth are pretty overwhelmingly negative, or 80-some percent around the world, according to Gallup's survey of over a year ago, and 70-some-odd percent in this country. Okay, we know life is hard. We know perhaps everybody can't find their sweet spot, but most people want to. So what's the deal? What do you think, Joe? More people not able to stretch their wings and fly doing what they love, whether they've got a successful career or not?
Don, I think it's, in short language, complacency. I think complacency is the enemy of creativity and productivity. Mm-hmm. Become complacent. We work our hours at jobs that have nothing to do with what our talents are and what our promises were to ourselves when we were younger. And we come home, we eat our dinners, we sit down, maybe we watch some television. I think that Hollywood, by far responsible for that complacency, because they offer us enticing shows that we get addicted to. Mm-hmm. I think that sitting down 4 hours in the evening, 5 hours in the evening, and watching television until it's time to go to bed, waking up, making breakfast, going to work, and doing it all over again, that's the biggest destructive force in your life. Mm-hmm. Those 4 hours, you don't need to use all 4 hours. I mean, I'm not suggesting you have to be a workaholic. Of course, everybody needs time to relax. But in those 4 hours, you could be sitting down with a pad of paper and just thinking of ideas that fit with the promise you made to yourself that you were going to build a very productive and successful future. What are the things that I enjoy doing? What are the kind of things that will give me satisfaction and economic freedom? You write that down on a pad of paper. You've got a laptop in front of you. You start researching it. Mm-hmm. You just start looking for information. How can I accomplish these things? What is it that I think I should do or have to do? You do that for a couple of hours at night, and then all of a sudden you're saying to yourself, okay, this is a great idea. All right, I should build a website. Let me look into how I can build a website without spending my children's school education tuition.
Right.
And there are ways to do it. There are ways to do it that are on the cheap, as they say, or affordable, as a salesperson would say. But it's the complacency that kills you, Don. It deadens you inside, and it breaks every promise you ever made to yourself.
Yes.
So my answer to you is that one word, complacency.
Right. Exactly. We're just pulled. Television now, as much as I think the internet is the greatest invention in the history of man in so many ways, communication-wise anyway, it just owns us. People sitting in restaurants instead of relaxing and enjoying a nice meal are texting somebody somewhere. Sometimes they're texting each other.
Well, you know, it's amazing. You know, sometimes I have children of 15 and 13. And sometimes I may go somewhere and take my son to whatever. He's a black belt, to a karate championship. And before the activity start, you look around the stands and everybody has a smartphone and their heads are bent over and they're all on their smartphones. Nobody's communicating other than, oh, hi, Bill. How you doing? Great. Everything okay? Yeah. Back to the smartphone. It's amazing. If you would just take a video and point it out to everybody, thousands of them, heads down, smartphones in front of them.
Blaise Pascal, middle 1600s, the mathematician, said most of man's problems stem from the fact that he can't sit quietly in a room for 20 minutes. That was in 1650, when information was not even close to what it is now. Can't sit quietly in a room. Unbelievable. So what have been the most deliverables or takeaways to you and your life by following your instincts and doing work that mattered to you?
Relationships, Don. I have developed so many relationships that are dear to me just by trying to pursue and trying to be productive in my life. People I would never have met people I would never have built relationships with, and they are fruitful on an emotional level. I'm not talking about relationships that only bring an economic benefit. I think you're being unfair to yourself if you only solicit from your friends an economic benefit. You're being unfair to yourself. You're being unfair to others. You know, Don, I have friends that I have known since I was 5 years old.
Wow.
They're still my friends today. I still see them regularly. I still go out and socialize with them. And I have friends from 20, 30 years ago from law school that I still see every day. We still see socially, our families meet. All of that is a core in your life that builds you and makes you a better person. It is, without a question, the structure or substructure of all of your ideals and attitudes.
Yes.
Sitting home and watching television, you're not going to develop a relationship with some reality star on television. It's just not going to happen.
No.
It's not going to be productive, and it's not going to offer anything to your emotional well-being or your mental health.
No.
But relationships, they're key in your life. And people, even more so, enjoy your company because they know you're loyal to that friendship. You're there if they have a question or a need or some other cause that they're into. They can rely on you to be positive about it, to be non-judgmental about it.
Yes.
Encourage them.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It couldn't be more important in development, in every aspect of our development. Is there a particular moment in your development, speaking of the topic, where you talked earlier about the young man could have turned left and gone home and continued to build a life, and he turned right and everything went south? Is there a moment or two where, in your opinion, happened to you?
Well, I think it's more of a compilation of moments. You know, when I reflect back, I note to myself that there are moments that perhaps in my history that I should have taken greater focus of.
Mm-hmm.
But my legal career, I've been exposed to so much as a criminal defense attorney that goes on behind the scenes in our judicial system. There have been a number of cases. The Felsaker daycare case is one that was particularly impressive on my mind when I was in law school, and it carried through probably for 4 or 5 years after I became a lawyer and joined the firm. That was the case where daycare owner, her daughter and son, were accused of sexually assaulting children, and there were like 18 children. There were hundreds of indictments.
Heavens.
And I knew that case intimately because I worked on it while I was in law school, and I worked on it when I was an attorney. They were convicted, but there was such outrage years after the conviction at those convictions because people reflected back on what had happened and how the children were influenced by the investigators into saying the things that they said. Now, you got to remember, these kids are like 4, 5, and 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly easy to manipulate. One of the greatest things that came from that case was a change in the methods of interrogation and investigation of young children by law enforcement officials. I think that was a good thing. There have been a number of murder cases that I've done where, you know, I firmly believe that the defendants were mentally ill. And under our law, if you do not have the capacity to understand the wrongfulness of your acts, you cannot be found guilty of first-degree murder or any other crimes. You can be found insane and incarcerated in a secure mental health facility, potentially for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't be convicted of any crime if you lack that capacity. And we've had a number of those cases where it's obvious that the offense occurred, but it's also obvious that the defendant's crazy as a loon.
Right.
But it just doesn't happen because Commonwealth, the state, the federal government, they attack. They spin the facts to make it look like the person intended the outcome. Well, of course they intended the outcome. They're mentally ill.
Right. What happened in the Felsaker case? Were they proved that there had been molestation, or did they prove that it was fabricated because of the way the young people were interrogated?
Well, what happened was there was such a flashback. There was a role like the Wall Street Journal. I remember a writer, and forgive me, I don't remember her name, took up the mantle on behalf of Tookie Amaral, Cheryl Amaral, Violet Amaral, who had passed. Once that investigation by that writer had been completed, she was convinced that they were not guilty. There were a number of organizations that came out and suggested that the convictions were wrong, but they were convicted. They were incarcerated, and it's past them now. Tookie's been released. What impacted me so much was this was the first major case that I was involved in. And now I'm a law student. I'm given the grudge work. I'm putting the files together. I'm collating police reports. Just an amazing amount of material generated. And I'm reading the reports. And I'm saying to myself, not even from a defensive posture. Was it right for a law enforcement official, a detective, to sit down with a five-year-old child who says that nothing ever happened to her, that Tookie or Violet or Cheryl never did anything to her, and not accept that answer, but to say to her, "Now, Mary, we talked to your friend Susie and we talked to your friend Mark, and they said those things happened to them, and they said that they saw those things happen to you. So isn't it true that those things happened to you?"
Oh, man.
I'm a law student. I'm reading this and right. I'm saying, this is cuckoo. This is corrupt. I mean, right. You're manipulating this child into saying something that the child explicitly told you did not happen.
Right. How long were they incarcerated?
Tookie did over 10 years. Cheryl and Violet won their appeal. They were incarcerated, but the appellate attorneys out of our office by then, after 10 years of dealing with a single case, pays to get fresh eyes. So at one point we just said to them, "You need fresh eyes on this case. So we're going to recommend an appellate counsel to you." And we work closely with them. So Cheryl and Violet won the appeal. The cases were overturned. They were released and they were placed on bail. The issue was whether or not the Commonwealth of Massachusetts was going to retry them. Mm. And the deal was that if you basically drop any future appeals from any other convictions, we will not pursue you. And the other contingent was admit you're guilty. But Cheryl and Violet spit that back at their face because neither Cheryl or Violet or Tookie have ever admitted that they were ever guilty of any of the offenses they were charged with, and they'll go to the grave saying they were innocent. Mm-hmm. So it was a deal struck, and the Commonwealth decided, well, if you're going to make a deal with us, we'll make a deal with you and we won't retry you. So Violet died shortly after that. Cheryl is living a good and productive life, is Tookie Amaral. Wonderful people. Really, the heart of America. And
thank you.
The horrible torture that they went through is just amazing. So that had a great deal of influence on me.
Yes. You've given us some very illuminating insights here and shared pieces of your journey that are super helpful. How would you boil down in a minute or so the most powerful lessons that you would learn for listeners out there, whether they're just getting started setting out in their career or whether they're looking at pre-retirement, to find themselves, to find their truth about what they're best at and how they can live a more productive life? What would you say?
Life is not always a friendly journey. Mm-hmm. You are going to hit brick walls, and sometimes people are going to build them while you're standing still or moving. You must persevere. It doesn't matter what the difficulties are. It doesn't matter how large they loom over you or how crushing they appear to you. There's a way through it, and the way through it is perseverance. Mm-hmm. You've got to persevere. You have to. You have no choice. You cannot cower in a fetal position on the floor because something has destroyed all the work you just did in the past 2 months. You pick the mantle up. Remember, it's just work. It's right. Just applying yourself.
Right.
It's not rocket science. Well, in case you're a rocket scientist, it's just work. You just do the work again. You do it over. You do it better. You learn a lesson. You persevere.
Right, exactly. Have there been books or resources along your journey these many years that you recommend?
That's funny you should ask that because I do very little reading for what you might consider entertainment. It's a product of being a lawyer. Lawyers read an incredible amount of technical data. Mm-hmm. Now, I have an active trial practice, so I'm always buried in a case or in a statute or in a law or some other thing that I've got to look and read at and concentrate on with great intensity to see what it means and how it may or may not fit in my particular issue or case. So I don't do a lot of entertainment reading. I do, and I have in the past, participate in ebooks, and I love ebooks because this is an opportunity for me to multimedia. I can sit on my laptop with my earbuds in and listen to a book on, I don't know, podcasting or video production or how to write a book. I've written a couple of books, and unfortunately, they went nowhere. And I can also work on my computer at the same time. So I can multitask if I listen to an ebook. The other thing I do is I use my smartphone for reading iBooks. And in those situations, I just finished The Old Man and the Sea. I read classics mostly. I find a little bit of solace in reading the classics. It's kind of comforting to me. And I'm currently involved in a book by a guest on killer legal attorney turned author, Lita Sedaris, Murder and Other Unnatural Disasters. And it's a tremendous read. I'm having just a ball with it. But I think that's the first book I've read for entertainment, I don't know, in decades, other than iBooks that I periodically read.
So what's happening in your life in the next handful of years? What's your vision going forward?
My vision going forward is to build this podcast as large as I possibly can so it can influence as many people as possible. Also to finish populating the International Academy of Podcast Professionals, which is a project in WordPress that I'm doing myself, although I have developers. I took it on myself. It's a massive project, a very, very deep website. Get that up and running, and hopefully it generates sufficient enough revenues that I can host conferences and or seminars that deal with not only podcasting, but the inspirational side of programming like your show.
Yes, thank you.
That's what I'd like to do. I don't want to be a trial attorney for the rest of my life. It is a very, very difficult profession. Just takes a lot out of you. And lawyers die in a courtroom. I could probably be a criminal trial attorney until I'm 90. My father's 86, and he's trying a case with my sister in New York City federal court as we speak. I could go on forever. As I told you, I believed I was hardwired for business and the law. I would like to kind of divert my life towards more towards the business as I grow older. So that's my future.
Well, Joe Bellero, it's been a great pleasure being with you today. We so much appreciate you sharing the highlights of your life journey, and I know that our listeners around the world have learned lessons that will help them on theirs. So how do those listeners get in touch with you?
Well, you can reach me at joe@killerlegal.net. You can visit killerlegal.net. You can reach out for me on the contact page. You can also reach me at Joe Bellero Jr., that's JR, at gmail.com. There are a number of ways. I'm always reachable. You can give me a call if you wish. My number is, I believe it's on killerlegal.net, and we'll keep in touch. I answer pretty much all of my emails, and I may not answer them immediately, but I will get back to you.
Okay, good, good. Well, listeners know that you can go to discoveryourtalentpodcast.com and put in Joseph J. Bellero Jr.'s name, see highlights of this, abbreviated highlights of this illuminating interview, as well as all the connecting points. Just a real quick way to solve that problem. I want to thank listeners across the world for joining us today, as always. If you head over to our website, you know that we have a infographic, What Do Highly Successful People Actually Do to Succeed? 12 Proven Career Building Strategies to Help You Do What You Love. This isn't some glib overview of some homilies that have been people have pulled together. There's a lot of that out there. This is the great thinkers, the men and women over decades and decades, probably a couple of centuries, that have thought through what it takes to find themselves and create a life. And we've had great feedback to it. It's free, and hope that you will take advantage of it. It would be our pleasure. You can also subscribe for free on iTunes and Stitcher. If you like the content, if you like the interviews, we'd love to have you be a part of our tribe and tell us how we can serve you better. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We don't learn them. We cannot ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive, we thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.